97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. My name is Bill Matthews alongside Mark Cox and our executive producer, Carl, the intern, Carl Pew Pew.
Pew Pew, Pew Pew, Pew Pew, Pew Pew.
Well said. Middle men.
Yeah, exactly. Glad you're with us this weekend. And boy, we have got a lot to cover in this show today. And I'm glad you're here. We're going to cover the outdoors because it's Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. We're going to cover the Second Amendment. We got you covered on both angles there in terms of the new ATF ruling this week. It's clear as mud, Bo Matthews. Did you know that?
You know, all I keep thinking is, man, they are coming in hot with all of these Illinois was, of course, the topic of conversation last week. And Friday last week, the ATF, they really are coming after the pistol ban. Let's see, the executive action will ban up to 40 million pistols with attached stabilizing braces. And I have to tell you, I've got friends that are supporters of the Second Amendment, and a couple of them are maimed on their arm, and they don't have the flexibility that they used to, and that's where the pistol braces really came in. Now, that's just one facet of this thing. I don't own a pistol brace. I think they look cool, but I think it also restricts me personally. How about you?
Well, it raises a lot of questions. I've never used one. I don't own one. I know people who do. But a lot of people wonder what all it affects, and that's the great thing about the show today. We're going to have on an expert, a local gun store owner who understands these things, who has sold them, who understands what they're used for, but just as importantly, to talk about what it doesn't include. Because a lot of people have AR-style pistols, which is a shorter version of the rifle, and some of these have a folding stock on them, which is designed to put up to the shoulder, right? I don't think those are affected by it, but we're going to get all of that straightened out for you today by my friend John Henderson, who's over at the Range St. Louis West.
And I would like to point out that it's also easy to pack them, like in a backpack or in a gun case. If you can fold them up, there's a transport benefit to that as well. Now, I don't know if anybody uses the folding braces like when they're out in the hunting, in the field hunting. But if you're hiking and packing to a place you want to hunt, well, that would be a benefit.
That's true. It's true. I just think it's much ado about nothing. They show me the examples of where this has been a problem with crime or with shootings, mass shootings of some sort. It's just like the attachment that you can get that goes on the back end of a Glock now that can basically make it almost like a fully automatic.
Right.
It's stupid. First of all, if you want one, I don't care. But if you care, if you shoot a gun for accuracy, you don't want a fully automatic weapon. It's stupid. Right. You can't aim it. It just, you pull the trigger and it's gone. I mean, a 20 round clip is gone like that. What's the point of that?
Well, and Mark, I mean, this isn't a law yet. It's just an executive order to ban this.
Correct.
So here are your choices. According to Gun Owners of America, rebuild your firearm at your own cost. Also register it with the federal government, which
is just never going to happen.
I cannot believe it. And of course, we're all going to hear about the lawsuits that are going to go after this. but you can destroy that firearm, that legally purchased firearm, or your other choice would be to go to jail for up to 10 years and pay a $250,000 fine.
It is a backdoor attempt to circumvent the Second Amendment, and a court is going to shut it down. Mark my words on it. By the way, since you brought up the court cases and challenges, because I know this one will be challenged. What about the case in New York? Now, this happened on Wednesday of this week. The United States Supreme Court unanimously chose not to hear a direct appeal or issue a restraining order against the overarching and overreaching gun laws passed in the state of New York. Gun store owners brought this case, and it's pending in a lower court right now, but they wanted immediate injunctive relief because of the requirements that it imposes on gun store owners in terms of how they can display their weapons in a store and a bunch of other just onerous requirements that are costing them money and you know, having to redesign stores and all of this crazy stuff. The Supreme Court turned it down, and all the headlines said, the Supreme Court rejected a challenge to the New York gun law. Well, that's not exactly what happened. What happened is that they wanted immediate relief, so they jumped past the lower courts straight to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court made a decision not to interfere until they get a ruling from the lower court. And even Scalia and Clarence Thomas commented separately that the decision not to issue that was not a reflection on the facts of the case. And I think that's basically a wink and a nod to say, just wait till we get it here, and we're going to straighten all this out.
You know, when they call it, gun control, it is truly controlling only the elites to be able to have. And if you're willing to register, which, again, as you mentioned, I don't want to register my firearms. There's no way. You can register me as a gun owner,
no.
But that doesn't make sense. But let's use this as a metaphor, because last week we heard gas stoves. They were coming after gas stoves. Take it one step further. They could do something similar to this with that control of combustible motor vehicles, like cars with gas. I mean, I know it's a ways off because there's not enough electric cars for everybody, but it's kind of the same thing. It's that same massive control, and it's not by specific groups. It's for everybody.
And that's what's frightening. All electric, they can turn it off with the flip of a switch.
Well, they can turn off the pumps of fuel too, but it's a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
And we're 100 years away, I believe, from being all electric everything. I just don't think it's possible.
My favorite meme of the week was somebody took a small gas stove, like something you'd use camping, and they attached a stock to the side of it. And called it an assault stove.
Mark, you did not forward that to me, man.
I shall, Bo Matthews. Don't you worry. I will go back and I will find that for you.
We have a meme contest, it seems like, every week between just Carl and you and me. You win a lot, though. That would win. I do want to interject here. We'll let this segment be sponsored by Razorback Armory, if you don't mind. Enjoying the Mantis X shooting system. I don't know if you've gotten it out since the initial meeting that we had, Mark, but it's a great system to save ammo from going to the range all the time, and it creates muscle memory. But to transfer it from in your home, working with Mantis X, to the range, I'm still waiting to do that. I haven't done that yet. But anyway, go to RazorbackArmory.com for more information.
It's a great point. I'm waiting to try the attachment for the AR.
Yeah.
Where you can practice your skill set with that as well, right?
The Blackbeard, yeah.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to that. I'm not to try that yet. It should be fun.
It's a trigger reset is what that Blackbeard thing is.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of the great outdoors, I got a story for you, Bo Matthews. This has been driving me crazy this week, and Carl's been hearing me complain about it all week.
Uh-oh.
coming up in our next segment, in fact, we're going to talk about camping, because I love to camp, and I've got a camper, and you've heard me talk about us towing it all over the place. We've towed our previous camper to Glacier National Park. We've towed the current one to Florida. We've towed it up to New York City. I mean, we've towed our camper to Door County up in Wisconsin. We enjoy camping. We love doing that. So we're planning a trip this weekend, this summer, I should say, and we want to go to Glacier National Park again, because it's so far our favorite spot in America. I just have to tell you. Love the state of Montana to begin with, but we love that park. We love going up there and hanging out and hiking, and it's just breathtaking. It really is. But go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, have you done a beach resort where you pull up to a beach campground where you're on the water?
We have.
And that beats that?
In our estimation, it does. To each his own, right?
Okay.
I've done beaches for a long time, and I went to the mountains, and I'm like, wow, I like this better. Anyway, I really do. It's just fantastic. Plus, I can carry a gun when I'm there.
Absolutely.
I'm just kidding. But regardless, the point of the story is we wanted to go to Glacier this summer, and I really think the pandemic started part of this problem. But if you want to camp inside a national park, it's difficult to get those campsites. More difficult than you might ever believe. You have to go online to a website called recreation.gov that is operated by the federal government to allow you to get access to these national parks. And it's not a lottery. You have the campsites don't open up till 6 months before you might camp. And at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central, on the date that your campsite opens up that you want, you have to be on the internet ready to load the days that you want into your little cart to Wow. try to check out. And I have been foiled 5 days in a row.
This is like getting Taylor Swift tickets.
I'm telling you, it's like a concert Ticketmaster kind of disaster. There are people across the country who want those sites, and they're all poised on their computer, and some of them must have like a Cray supercomputer faster than mine, and they're able to push the button faster than I am. Like, I'll watch on a digital clock when it rolls over to 9 a.m. and hit load, and I'm still told that the site's already been taken. I don't know how they do it. I don't know who's gaming the system. Sure. But there are people out there beating me to this, and it's driving me crazy. So,
is there a possibility that there are people out there like the ticket resellers out there? You know what I'm saying?
We don't think so. Because when you have a reservation, you have to show up with your reservation and show your ID. You can't sell it to someone else. It has to go back into the system to go back to someone else. So
I wish there was someone you could talk to who would know the ins and outs of that. Hey, who are we going to talk to next?
We're going to talk to Warren Patton, who's the president of the Midwest Gateway RV Dealers, coming up here shortly. I wonder if he's experienced this before, because you have to understand that system to use it. And I wonder how many people think, hey, I'm going to go to Glacier, and they have no idea.
And I wonder if we're going to witness Mark Cox upgrading his RV to a new one for this trip. We're going to find out. Warren's a master at that. Warren Patton is going to be our guest next on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Making music
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Welcome back, and I can't wait to get on the road again with my RV, get it hooked up to the truck, get a solid 13 miles to the gallon, and head off into the wild outdoors. How about you, Bo Matthews?
You're just showing off, pal. You're showing off. Here comes the heat, because Warren Patton is he's got a great team at Byerly. He's gonna upgrade your RV for you.
You think he will? Hey, Warren, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you?
All right, doing great. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, president of the Midwest Gateway RV Dealers Association, and you got the RV show coming up here at the end of January. We'll get to more details on that in just a couple of minutes. Are you camping now? I think the last time we talked to you, you were actually on vacation in Florida somewhere.
That is absolutely true. Yeah, last time we talked, I was on the middle of a bit of a motorhome journey. Took a trip with the family, went down, stayed at a lot of campgrounds on the way down to Florida, then stayed at a hotel, then parked the RV in storage, then stayed at a house with the extended family, then went back and we visited, stayed about 9 to 10 nights in campgrounds along the way, some pretty cool campgrounds in Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. It was a pretty cool trip.
And created so many memories. I bet you're remembering the memories of the family stuff and the things that you saw even more than the travel itself. But as you roll down the road, you can bring everything you need with you, which is a wonderful experience for anybody that loves RVs. Warren, it's really good to have you on and good to talk to you again. What they have at Byerly is they have a great following of for anybody that's first timers, for sure. They got a great video and podcast deal. Yeah, they've got a whole studio, Mark. You'd be impressed. They've got a whole studio where they do this stuff. And what I like about them is, for somebody that doesn't RV and considering it, there's some to learn. I'm not going to say a lot, but you got to know what you're talking about. And your knowledge base out at your place and at the show as well is extensive, wouldn't you say?
We always try to be the leader in the industry in terms of education for consumers. And any of our viewers who have done it for a long period of time, we like to teach them things that they don't know. You know, the thing about the industry is it's always changing. They're always adding new things. A lot of times people find out things that they didn't even know, and they've been RVers for you know, a decade.
Yeah. They're adding new gimmicks that I want is what they're doing, right?
That's what not I, gimmicks.
Gadgets. new gadgets that I want. Every time I go down to Byerly, and honestly, Warren, and not trying to suck up to you, I'm down there quite often refilling my propane tanks or, buying toilet paper or water treatment or something. And the folks in your service department are always so helpful. I really appreciate that. They're like part of the family for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, for us in particular, service is one of the biggest parts of the industry. Anybody who's owned a camper knows that at some point you're going to need something. You basically bought a house when you have an RV, and there's a little bit of maintenance that you need to do to make sure. And so we always are here to both stand by from the actual repair capacity, from the service capacity, from the advice capacity to help people in their service and parts needs. And, for us at Byerly, that's where we make, our biggest investments is in our service facilities and our service people. And we have a fantastic team and a very knowledgeable staff, and we're always just continuing training with them.
It is pretty cool to see. I've actually got to tour the repair area. If you've been to a mechanic shop or something like that, dude, they're RVs. They're monster RVs back there that they're doing stuff on. It's so cool. But what's really good about those that do RV and have been doing it for years, there's always something like Mark wants to go to Grand Teton because that's his favorite place at this point. But the travel show, the RV travel show that's going to be going on, you got a lot of representatives that are going to be there saying, hey, come to our resort because this is why. Can you talk about some of those ideas?
Yeah, well, one of the great things about the St. Louis RV Travel Show is that we have the ability to not only have the dealers, the dealers in St. Louis that have been around forever, the eight most trusted, family dealers in the area, but we also get to add some vendors in, have people from campgrounds, from people from the big parks coming in and kind of giving you the ability to kind of see, what can I do? It's building that dream. Like you were talking about, I took this trip last year and I made these memories and I remember that stuff. And it's, but a lot of people have the vision of the memories they want to create. And, these people help fill in the vision of it's not the RV. It's where do you want to go? What do you want to do? How do you want to spend your time with your family, your loved ones, your friends, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think that's great. And to Bo's point, we're planning to take our RV to a Glacier National Park up in Montana this summer. And I was describing to Bo my frustration this week with this system where you have to book, if you want a campsite within the national park, you have to book it 6 months out, like to the minute. Like when 9 a.m. Eastern rolls around, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central, you have to be ready to push load my cart with the days you want. And I have been beaten at that for a solid week now. I've been trying to get a campsite, and somebody keeps snatching it right out from under me. I mean, that maybe at the RV show there will be somebody there that can school me on how to do that more effectively.
I'll have to talk to Tammy if that's one of the vendors that we have. There's the person who can beat you the system on that. It's like trying to scout the tickets for some of those concerts, right?
I know. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I was going to say, that's one of the things that I think a lot of people don't realize is that the national parks, the National RV Association, all these people are aware of some of those challenges that you're facing. And I think a lot of consumers may not be aware of, the industry discussions that have and the investments that are being made to kind of make that process better in the future. Right now, you're still constrained by a limited number of spaces. But if you paid attention in the last couple of years, and the RV Dealer Association and Go RVing have been huge advocates of getting Congress to kind of allow some use of public land and some other funding. So a lot of that stuff is going to be opening up in the future to create more spaces, to create more investment in the parks. But also that on the private side of campgrounds, people are building campgrounds everywhere because they've seen how many RVs have been sold over the last 5 to 10 years. And they know that that is how people are spending their time. So there is sometimes this constraint funnel right now, but the future is everybody's already building. They already know, and they've actually been working on this for beyond the last 5 years. They've been aware of the problem, and they're really, really investing a lot across the country in making that experience so much better for people.
Yeah, it's a great point. We're talking to Warren Patton, the president of the Midwest Gateway RV Dealers Association, and also in charge down at Byerly RV there in Eureka. And you, maybe this speaks to part of the demand as well. I know COVID had a huge impact on your industry. Suddenly people are looking for things to do with their family that where they're maybe not around 1,000 other people. Camping is one way to do that. And maybe talk a little bit about the explosion you guys have seen in the industry the last couple of years.
You know, it's been a very unique experience overall in the industry. You know, the RV industry has seen a significant growth from about 2016 on. And it was the talk that everybody had about, oh, the boomer generation is going to come in, they're going to buy all the RVs. What we really saw was it wasn't only them. There's a whole younger generation that values experience as the way that they want to spend their time. They value having those moments and those memories. And so what we really saw over the past 8-9 years was a whole trend of not just the people retiring looking for that big motorhome or however they want to spend their time moving around. It was a younger generation of families entering the market that really drove it. And then during COVID, what really the unique thing that happened was a whole bunch of people who may have never been interested in RVing started to look at the lifestyle and say, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Now we can travel together as a family. Maybe we have all of our stuff here. We don't have to travel hotel to hotel. Maybe I can work from anywhere. So I can now go out and RV and I can work wherever I want to. And so that group of people over the past 3 years since COVID really exploded the industry, because it wasn't just the growth of people who were intenders. It was now a whole bunch of people are like, wow, I never saw this before. And so that has been a huge boom to the industry. And we're still seeing a lot of those people as customers. And we're hoping that they are continued customers over the long haul as well.
Yeah, Warren, I want to interject that the technology is in the RV business is so rapidly changing with whether it's solar panels or whether it's USB ports or Wi-Fi. People are buying Starlink and using their Wi-Fi if they don't have service at a campground they're at or whatever. But when they found out that they could work, you know, remotely anywhere, well, a lot of people have chose to do that. And that the last time I saw you, there was one RV that literally had enough solar panels on top that could charge these giant batteries.
Yeah.
And it could be off grid for quite a while, days, I think, you know, with the solar panels. Anything that's brand new that's in the RV that you have never seen in all these years that you're like, people are not going to believe this.
Well, I think that particular innovation in terms of the actual batteries that can be used to power these things for multiple days. Yeah. That's in more vehicles than people can imagine right now. I think a lot of consumers may have seen, okay, yeah, that's in, you know, some vans, or that's in some large motorhomes where you might be able to do that. But we are now seeing that, you saw it in particular in a fifth wheel toy hauler,
that's what it was.
In a Valor Alliance. That was an incredible vehicle. A lot of this change was accelerated. It was already happening, but it was accelerated by COVID because manufacturers ran out of generators. You know, so they had to get innovative, and they're like, okay, we're already going to do this battery system. Let's just start doing it now. But where we're really seeing it is now you're seeing 12-volt, heavy-duty 12-volt systems on travel trailers. You're starting to see it in products that we might not have expected to see it right now. Now you're starting to see that off grid in a whole bunch of other things. And it was funny that you mentioned Starlink, because there was an actual article yesterday, an announcement by one of the major motorhome companies. Thor Motor Coach announced that they were going to start looking at putting Starlink in as an added feature into some of their motorhomes.
Nice.
And really, how many times have you been showing off a motorhome yourself or any of your sales force that people say, I could live here. This is nicer than my home. It happens every day, right?
it absolutely does. And I think when you go down to the RV show, you know, when you go to America's Center and you're wandering through and you're looking at all these toys, you know, everybody's going through. That is one of the most common statements that people make as they walk through these motorhomes. And, you know, you got, you know, 300 square foot motorhome, basically, you know, travel trailer. And you're like, oh, wow, this is huge. You know, this is nicer than my house. And those are the most common things that you hear. And the thing is, they have everything that you need. They have everything that's in your house.
Fireplace,
even the travel trailers.
Yeah.
And you and I kind of walking, when you were out at the Labo, we kind of walked through like every different size of vehicle. And you can see that the amenities, even in the smaller travel trailers, are very similar to the big motorhomes. You know, you might just be missing a few things. Your motorhome will get you your dishwasher, which you're not going to have in a travel trailer.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you've got everything from in the smaller ones. You almost have everything that you have in the larger ones. It's just more compact and made for, you know, the person who doesn't want the big vehicle, or they want the right payment, or, you know, it's the perfect budget size for them. They have a place to store it, that sort of thing.
It's a good point. You know, Warren, Starlink today, Skynet tomorrow, right? Before you know it. Hey, by the way, the RV show is happening the 27th and to the 29th at America Center. This is the 45th year. Bigger and better than ever?
Yes. This is going to be one of the biggest shows that we have had in a long time. This is a very unique show, and I want to prepare a lot of people who have been down there before. There will be two entrances to the show. There will be an entrance in the old traditional hall 3-4 corner right there, and there will also be an entrance at the dome, and it'll kind of be a U-shaped layout because we have so much space for all of our dealers. We have a lot of vendors there. We have some unique vendors that we've never had before. But we're going to bring so much inventory to this show to make it one of the biggest shows that we've ever had. So it's going to be a really big deal. And, you know, Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., and then Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5. You know, the biggest thing is we even have valet parking this year. Because
nice.
I know a lot of
wow.
people, they go downtown, they're not really sure where should I be parking. If you go to the A entrance at the Dome, which I believe is at 7th and... As I blank on the street right there.
No worries. You know what? Actually, Warren, let me just interject. Go to stlrv.com for all the information that you need. Warren Patton, thank you so much. Good luck at this giant show you guys are putting on the 27th through the 29th of January. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bo. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we're back in just a minute with John Henderson from The Range to talk about these new ATF rules on braces for your pistols. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. And, you know, the ATF issued a bunch of rules this week, and I started to try to read it, and I started drifting off and, you know, thought about calling my attorney because I don't know what in the world they're trying to get at. So we thought we'd try to get to the bottom of that. And we've invited my friend John Henderson, the big kahuna out at the Range St. Louis West, chief cook and bottle washer out there. John, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Good to get you back on the radio again.
It's good to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I mentioned that I saw this release come down. In fact, I believe you guys posted it up on social media so that people could try to start wrapping their brain around these rules the ATF is trying to put in place regarding braces. Why don't we just start at the beginning? What is a pistol brace?
So pistol braces came about several years ago. So first of all, AR pistols have been around for a long time.
Right.
You know, we're talking 40, 50 years. Don't quote me on the exact time frame. And basically, it's an AR that has a buffer tube on it and has no stock, basically. And you can have a barrel that's less than 16 inches. And they've been around, like I said, for, you know, multiple decades. Braces came around, I don't know the exact time frame, a decade or so ago. And basically, it was originally designed to let someone who had a disability, either whether it was an amputee or someone who just had some motor control problems with an arm or something, to be able to strap the backside of that brace to their forearm and still shoot an AR pistol.
Okay.
So, and that's how it came about. It was submitted to ATF. They said, yeah, they're not socks. They're braces. It's fine. Sort of created this new category of item called a brace instead of being a stock. So that's what a pistol brace is. It's not a stock. It's actually, you know, designed to be strapped to your forearm.
John, you know, I have a couple of friends I mentioned at the beginning of this show that have, you know, a disability, if you will, or a need for a brace because they can't shoot otherwise, and they enjoy the sport of shooting. Now, for those people that don't have that disability with their forearm, please explain the benefits. I know what they are, but I'd like you to explain the benefits for somebody that, you know, let's say able body. I don't want people writing me emails or anything, but, you know, somebody that doesn't have any holdbacks, why would somebody want to have that pistol brace?
Well, it's no different than why you would want to have a pistol in general. You know, it's a smaller firearm, so, you know, it's easy for you to carry, it's easy to maneuver. There's a tons of benefits with it. That come with it. And, you know, by estimates, I've seen estimates as low as 20 and as high as 40 million braced AR and other style rifles in this country. So these are, there's a lot of these things out there. This is not the, you know, the odd gun collector that has this thing, or just the someone who has an ability issue that is using it. They're in common use at this point.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because they help you stabilize the firearm. You're using, you know, think geometry. It's giving you more accuracy because it's more stable.
But I think that the issue that the regulators have is that people are buying these brace pistols, and they're actually putting them on their shoulder the way they would a similar sized rifle. And
right.
That's their issue. It's the way people are using them.
The amazing thing to me when I see the government try to cook up some new backdoor gun registration effort like this is show me the problem. You've presented a solution to what I don't see as a problem. I mean, where is this an issue other than in the hands of a criminal? It's not the law-abiding citizens who would even cause a problem with this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that all the criminals that may or may not use such an item are rushing to register them with the ATF and turn them in, right? Yeah, it's the same way. They're going to make laws that affects the law-abiding citizen, and the criminal's going to continue to go on and do their criminal activity, and by definition, they're not going to follow the law. So now if they do that, then we can charge them with a felony. That's great. They're a criminal. They're already using the gun to commit a felony. You can already charge them with felonies. What is one more? So it's really the people that are going to be affected about it are you and me.
Yeah,
that's the people that are going to be affected by it.
That's good. It's a good point.
Are the phones ringing off the hook with people concerned about this? Because, you know, just like in Illinois with all the bans that they did just last week with Governor Pritzker, are people calling you for information on, okay, what do I need to do, or not really?
Yeah, no, people are asking. All of the forums have blown up with this. They dropped this on, I guess, Friday, and SHOT Show started in earnest on Monday. So it has consumed our industry for the past week, because the rules that they made and everything they put out so far, all 293 pages of it, is extremely ambiguous and almost arbitrary. So it's like we don't – people ask us, well, how do I comply with it? And they're like, well, I don't know. Because the way they wrote the rules, there's so much ambiguity in it. The only way I can tell you to 100% comply with it is once they file this in the Federal Registry, you've got 120 days to either form one your SBR and make it an SBR, or replace it with a barrel barrel that's 16 inches or greater and basically make it so it's a rifle.
Yeah.
Or you could destroy the firearm or surrender it to the ATF. That's the only way I can tell you to fully comply with it. I can't tell you because, you know, we just reread through the rules this morning even taking it back to just a non-brace pistol, the way these new rules are written, that I don't think that would necessarily solve your problem. So
exactly.
It's a big mess, and I don't understand why it takes 292 pages to try to address this issue. But going back to what you're reading,
your guesstimate is how many of these pistol braces are out there in the U.S.?
It's not my guesstimate. Don't quote me on the source, but as I've been reading up on this the past week or so, I've seen numbers as low as 20 million braces and as high as 40 million. brace.
Well, here's the funny thing. There's one
over the past decade or so.
Here's irony. Officials estimate about 3 million stabilizing braces are currently owned in the U.S. So,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
These are the same people that estimate our budget deficits and all that every year.
It's a great point.
Now it makes sense.
Yeah, thank you. John Henderson is our guest from the Range St. Louis West out at 14803 Manchester Road out there in Baldwin. I hope you go in and see him. So, John, as I read through this, just to muddy the waters a little more, somebody I know has bought an AR style pistol the other day that has a folding stock. Where does that fit into this?
So, first of all, if it's truly a stock and not a brace,
right,
and it's a pistol. The barrel is less than 16 inches. Then that is an SBR. Period. That definition's been around since the NFA back in the 30s. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. If you take a regular rifle and it has a regular stock on it, and if the barrel is less than 16 inches, it's called an SBR, short barreled rifle, and that's been regulated for almost a century now. Now, if it's a brace that also folds, well, that's in this big gray area that we're talking about right now of what does that mean? And I can tell you in the end, it's going to mean that it's either going to be an SBR, you're taking that folding stock off of it because it can't have a stock on it, or a brace under this new rule if the barrel is less than 16 inches.
Wow. I guess this past week, John, would probably be one of those weeks when you're very glad that all those years ago when you decided to open up the range, you didn't do it in Illinois. Because at least in Missouri, there's some sanity. I mean, I've talked to Steve King, who runs Metro Shooting Supplies. He's got stores in both states. But for the people that don't, who own gun stores in Illinois, they're facing a nightmare right now. They've got inventory. They're going to have to sell to somebody, maybe to somebody in a state like Missouri, right? Because they can't sell it anymore.
Yeah, so, I mean, what I would envision happen is a lot of manufacturers are probably going to help those guys out and take that inventory back or help them transfer it to other stores that can still legally have those items and sell them. But to the average person, I mean, we've got calls that first day from people, hey, I'm over in Illinois, what do I do with this? There's just no good answer. And here's what's so frustrating to this is both the state of Illinois and both this new rule, this new law in Illinois, both there's laws on the books, there's court rulings on the books that all say you can't do this stuff. But these legislatures are these regulators do it anyway.
Yeah.
And even though they've been turned down, I mean, there was a bump stock ban during the Trump era, and Sixth Circuit, don't quote me on which court it was, just ruled that, no, you can't make that rule and outlaw bump stocks because it's obviously not part of the trigger mechanism, which is what makes a machine gun. So that happened just a few weeks ago, early January. So that's still going to have to go through more appeals and eventually probably to the Supreme Court for an ultimate ruling. But they put another – this rule is even more ambiguous than the bump stock rule that they put out. And that's what's frustrating – is the judge in that bump stock rule basically said, if you're going to do this, you got to go back to Congress and get a law that says, this thing is also a machine gun. So it's going to be years of this, and then we'll ultimately see what it is. And it just takes forever
to get it adjudicated. You'll probably agree because we saw with the bump stock, it's just chipping away. They're just chipping away little by little.
Oh, yeah.
But now with the Biden White House, it seems like they're just taking huge, chunks, pounds of flesh from law-abiding gun owners. So it's frightening because it's coming, as I said at the beginning of the show, we're coming in hot.
Yeah. They're
coming in hot after your guns.
Very true. John, listen, always appreciate your time, my friend, and your support of the show. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Guys. Appreciate it.
We will talk soon. John Henderson with the Range St. Louis West, 14803 Manchester Road. Great shooting range. Great indoor shooting range. Locally owned. You feel like a member of the family out there. You can always go to therangestl.com to find out more about what they got going on.
It's a great site. A lot of information here on the show. Share the show with your Second Amendment friends and your RVing friends, your people that like to get outside and outdoors. It's going to be a heck of a year in 2023 for RVers because Mark's going to get an upgraded RV, I'm sure of it, if he goes to that show.
I'm going to the show, that's for sure. You can bet on that.
and maybe get a spot at Glacier.
Oh, I hope so.
But
hope so.
Yeah, please share the show because we really want to make sure everybody gets this information. Carl, you didn't pew-pew.
I pew-pewed at the very beginning of the show,
right,
Mark. It was like...
You did?
I did.
Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Pew-pew, Bo.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. And, you know, the ATF issued a bunch of rules this week, and I started to try to read it, and I started drifting off and, you know, thought about calling my attorney because I don't know what in the world they're trying to get at. So we thought we'd try to get to the bottom of that. And we've invited my friend John Henderson, the big kahuna out at the Range St. Louis West, chief cook and bottle washer out there. John, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Good to get you back on the radio again.
It's good to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I mentioned that I saw this release come down. In fact, I believe you guys posted it up on social media so that people could try to start wrapping their brain around these rules the ATF is trying to put in place regarding braces. Why don't we just start at the beginning? What is a pistol brace?
So pistol braces came about several years ago. So first of all, AR pistols have been around for a long time.
Right.
You know, we're talking 40, 50 years. Don't quote me on the exact time frame. And basically, it's an AR that has a buffer tube on it and has no stock, basically. And you can have a barrel that's less than 16 inches. And they've been around, like I said, for multiple decades. Braces came around, I don't know the exact time frame, a decade or so ago. And basically, it was originally designed to let someone who had a disability, either whether it was an amputee or someone who just had some motor control problems with an arm or something, to be able to strap the backside of that brace to their forearm and still shoot an AR pistol.
Okay.
And that's how it came about. It was submitted to ATF. They said, yeah, they're not stocks, they're braces. It's fine. Sort of created this new category of item called a brace instead of being a stock. So that's what a pistol brace is. It's not a stock. It's actually, designed to be strapped to your forearm.
John, I have a couple of friends I mentioned at the beginning of this show that have a disability, if you will, or a need for a brace because they can't shoot otherwise, and they enjoy the sport of shooting. Now, for those people that don't have that disability with their forearm, please explain the benefits. I know what they are, but I'd like you to explain the benefits for somebody that, let's say able body. I don't want people writing me emails or anything, but somebody that doesn't have any holdbacks, why would somebody want to have that pistol brace?
Well, it's no different than why you would want to have a pistol in general. It's a smaller firearm, so, it's easy for you to carry, it's easy to maneuver. There's a tons of benefits with it that come with it. And, by estimates, I've seen estimates as low as 20 and as high as 40 million braced AR and other style rifles in this country. So there's a lot of these things out there. This is not the odd gun collector that has this thing, or just the someone who has an ability issue that is using it. They're in common use at this point.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because they help you stabilize the firearm. You're using, geometry. It's giving you more accuracy because it's more stable.
But I think that the issue that the regulators have is that people are buying these brace pistols, and they're actually putting them on their shoulder the way they would a similar sized rifle. And
right.
That's their issue. It's the way people are using them.
The amazing thing to me when I see the government try to cook up some new backdoor gun registration effort like this is show me the problem. You've presented a solution to what I don't see as a problem. I mean, where is this an issue other than in the hands of a criminal? It's not the law-abiding citizens who would even cause a problem with this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that all the criminals that may or may not use such an item are rushing to register them with the ATF and turn them in, right? Yeah, it's the same way. They're going to make laws that the law, it affects a law-abiding citizen, and the criminal is going to continue to go on and do their criminal activity. And by definition, they're not going to follow the law. So now if they do that, then we can charge them with a felony. That's great. They're a criminal. They're already using the gun to commit a felony. You can already charge them with felonies. What is one more? So it's really the people that are going to be affected about it are you and me.
Yeah.
That's the people that are going to be affected by it.
That's good. It's a good point.
Are the phones ringing off the hook with people concerned about this? Because, you know, just like in Illinois with all the bans that they did just last week with Governor Pritzker, are people calling you for information on, okay, what do I need to do, or not really?
Yeah, no. People are asking. All of the forums have blown up with this. They dropped this on, I guess, Friday, and SHOT Show started in earnest on Monday. So it has consumed our industry for the past week, because the rules that they made and everything they put out so far, all 293 pages of it, is extremely ambiguous and almost arbitrary. So it's like we don't. People ask us, why do I comply with it? And they're like, well, I don't know. Because the way they wrote the rules, there's so much ambiguity in it. The only way I can tell you to 100% comply with it is once they file this in the Federal Registry, you've got 120 days to either form one, your SBR, and make it an SBR, or replace it with a barrel that's 16 inches or greater and basically make it so it's a rifle.
Yeah.
Or you could destroy the firearm or surrender it to the ATF. That's the only way I can tell you to fully comply with it. I can't tell you because, you know, we just reread through the rules this morning on, well, even taking it back to just a non-brace pistol, the way these new rules are written, that I don't think that would necessarily solve your problem. So
exactly.
It's a big mess, and I don't understand why it takes 292 pages to try to address this issue. But going back to what you're
reading, your guesstimate is how many of these pistol braces are out there in the U.S.?
It's not my guesstimate. Don't quote me on the source. But as I've been reading up on this the past week or so, I've seen numbers as low as 20 million braces and as high as 40 million.
Well, here's the funny thing. There's one
over the past decade or so.
Here's irony. Officials estimate about 3 million stabilizing braces are currently owned in the U.S. So.
These are the same people that estimate our budget deficits and all that every year.
It's a great point.
Now it makes sense.
Yeah, thank you. John Henderson is our guest from the Range St. Louis West out at 14803 Manchester Road out there in Baldwin. I hope you go in and see him. So, John, as I read through this, just to muddy the waters a little more, somebody I know has bought an AR a style pistol the other day that has a folding stock. Where does that fit into this?
So first of all, if it's truly a stock and not a brace,
right?
And it's a pistol. The barrel is less than 16 inches. Then that is an SBR. Period. That definition's been around since the NFA back in the 30s. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. If you take a regular rifle and it has a regular stock on it, and the barrel is less than 16 inches, it's called an SBR, short-barreled rifle, and that's been regulated for almost a century now. Now, if it's a brace that also folds, well, that's in this big gray area that we're talking about right now of what does that mean? And I can tell you in the end, it's going to mean that it's either going to be an SBR, you're taking that folding stock off of it because it can't have a stock on it, or a brace under this new rule if the barrel is less than 16 inches.
Wow. I guess this past week, John, would probably be one of those weeks when you're very glad that all those years ago when you decided to open up the range, you didn't do it in Illinois. Because at least in Missouri, there's some sanity. I mean, I've talked to Steve King, who runs Metro Shooting Supplies. He's got stores in both states. But for the people that don't, who own gun stores in Illinois, they're facing a nightmare right now. They've got inventory. They're going to have to sell to somebody, maybe to somebody in a state like Missouri, right? Because they can't sell it anymore.
Yeah, so, I mean, what I would envision happen is a lot of manufacturers are probably going to help those guys out and take that inventory back or help them transfer it to other stores that can still legally have those items and sell them. But to the average person, I mean, we've got calls that first day from people, hey, I'm over in Illinois. What do I do with this? There's just no good answer. And here's what's so frustrating to this is both the state of Illinois and both this new rule, this new law in Illinois, both there's laws on the books, there's court rulings on the books that all say you can't do this stuff. But these legislatures are these regulators do it anyway.
Yeah.
And even though they've been turned down, I mean, there was a bump stock ban during the Trump era, and Sixth Circuit, don't quote me on which court it was, just ruled that, no, you can't make that rule and outlaw bump stocks because it's obviously not part of the trigger mechanism, which is what makes a machine gun. So that happened just a few weeks ago, early January. So that's still going to have to go through more appeals and eventually probably to the Supreme Court for an ultimate ruling. But they put another – this rule is even more ambiguous than the bump stock rule that they put out. And that's what's frustrating is the judge in that bump stock rule basically said, you know, if you're going to do this, you got to go back to Congress and get a law that says, yeah, this thing is also a machine gun. So it's going to be years of this, and then we'll ultimately see what it is. And it just takes forever
to get it adjudicated. You'll probably agree because we saw with the bump stock, it's just chipping away. They're just chipping away little by little.
Oh, yeah.
But now with the Biden White House, it seems like they're just taking huge, you know, chunks, pounds of flesh from law-abiding gun owners. So it's frightening because it's coming, as I said at the beginning of the show, we're coming in hot.
Yeah.
We're coming in hot after your guns.
Very true. John, listen, always appreciate your time, my friend, and your support of the show. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Guys. Appreciate it.
We will talk soon. John Henderson with the Range St. Louis West, 14803 Manchester Road. Great shooting range. Great indoor shooting range. Locally owned. You feel like a member of the family out there. You can always go to therangestl.com to find out more about what they got going on.
It's a great site. A lot of information here on the show. Share the show with your Second Amendment friends and your RVing friends, your people that like to get outside and outdoors. It's going to be a heck of a year in 2023 for RVers because Mark's going to get an upgraded RV, I'm sure of it, if he goes to that show.
I'm going to the show, that's for sure. You can bet on that.
And
that's
maybe get a spot at Glacier.
Oh, I hope so.
But
hope so.
Yeah, please share the show because we really want to make sure everybody gets this information. Carl, you didn't pew-pew.
I pew-pewed at the very beginning of the show,
all
Mark.
Right.
It was like...
You did?
I did.
Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Pew-pew, Bo.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.